6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to the first episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com of 2022. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually by the person I have missed for almost a month now, Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03. Welcome back, Anna.
Thank you. I am back in the country. They let me back in. I came back to the snowpocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after 16-degree weather in London, that was what I left. And then, you know, 16. Minus 16. Yeah, it was 16 in London. How crazy is that? I mean, that's too warm for December, but yeah.
That's like, was there like decent skies or was it like 16 and wet?
It wasn't wet, but it wasn't like sunny either. Like it was just kind of.
Yeah, like a Vancouver spring, so to speak. Right? Yeah. Oh, 16. Well, I mean, the weather is kind of all over the place. Like I know Toronto has found its winter temperatures again, but for a while they were like getting Vancouver winter, you know, temperatures while we were out here, you know, the day after tomorrow, like weather.
Yeah. I mean, we've had that all year, to be fair.
Yeah. It's, you know, you called it, was it Snowmageddon, Snowpocalypse?
I mean, either work.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is like here in Vancouver, we often refer to like Snowmageddon or Snowpocalypse. It's just the moment snow falls because, you know, we can't handle this, I mean, as a collective community, because we don't get it enough. Though, when we do get, like, the large winter storms that drop in every decade or so, it is truly a snowpocalypse or Snowmageddon. And, I mean, not only did we have crazy amounts of snow, we had temperatures so cold that pipes were bursting. Like, in our townhouse complex, people were, like, trying to sort of community troubleshoot, like, oh, I'm not getting hot water or I'm not getting cold water. And I'm like, well, turn your heat up drastically or cut holes into the dry, like, and pump hot air in there to thaw. And then.
Yeah. Our landlord's pipes froze. Like ours were fine apparently, but theirs froze. And so I was getting this in our group text whilst I'm in London being like, is this the wrong time to say that it's 16 degrees here?
Yeah. I mean, again, it goes to the point that, like, I don't know if the building code has changed in recent years, but, you know, back in the day, you know, you didn't need to insulate pipes the same way as one might anywhere east of us or even further north, right? It was just very, very mild climate. But it's just been nuts. You know, speaking of you know, being frozen, the Canucks hockey action had been for quite some time. Though, they've played a couple of games since their COVID break.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of lucky that we took a break over Christmas, right? Because Canucks did too, and I don't know what we would have covered. But yeah, they've had a little time off. It's like a European football winter break.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, like Premier League doesn't usually have, but have also kind of had because they've had a COVID break as well. So,
yeah, it obviously introduced complexity to, you know, the NHL scheduling department and continues to introduce complexity. We'll get into that and everything that's happening in this show. But to rewind a little bit before we actually dive into rewind, prior to recording with Chris Faber, we were trying to work around the Canucks schedule. And the difficulty is we weren't entirely sure if there would be a game. And if so, when would we be recording? Because obviously, you know, Faber's got commitments that don't include C4 in his day-to-day.
And this was when the Seattle game, right? Right before Christmas that you were trying to figure out if that would go?
Well, no. This was actually not the Seattle game. Seattle was just after. Would have been just after Christmas. No, this was before. And so originally we were going to record, we thought on a Monday night, but then was thought that that might not work very well. Then it was Sunday, but Sunday had a game. And I'm like, well, we can record late Sunday. We ultimately recorded Sunday. It worked because the Canucks didn't play. They got the extended break. But yeah, I mean, this has impacted us, the most important, longest running, best mediocre Canucks podcast in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's selfish in a way. But it was also selfish of the Canucks to go on their winning streak when I was in the UK. So,
which I actually wanted to ask you about. So you know what? Let's start backing this podcast up. So Anna, you were watching the Canucks. If you were watching the Canucks at crazy hours in the morning after you had departed of Vancouver, but as you just mentioned, the Vancouver Canucks have strung together an unbelievable series of games. And remain, well, I don't know, can we actually say undefeated?
I mean, no, because it's still a loss, even if you lose in a shootout. But
right. But they have gotten points in every game that they have played.
Yeah, so the point streak continues. You can say that.
Even then, like that point streak, and this is the thing, this is where we go back to like when we talked about shootouts and my sort of disdain for them now. The Canucks lost in a shootout, which I feel should be different than if you lost in overtime, let alone regulation. Like there is, it's just a crazy run regardless of how you look at it.
Yeah. I mean, for the Canucks, like consistency does not usually go hand in hand. And like, look at some of the teams in there, like started off like, with a very dominant win against LA, who were a strong team, you know, beating Boston. They beat Carolina, who are like one of the hottest teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And yeah, even the COVID break didn't disrupt them too much. So yeah, it's definitely out of character.
It is. Well, it definitely for this team. And I know there are some who suggest, oh, see, this is proof that Travis Green was the problem. And prior to this weekend, I would have argued that that was not necessarily the case. Maybe the message wasn't necessarily being heard as well as it was, but I felt that Travis Green was working with the hand that he was dealt as best as he could. But this weekend on hockey night, I believe it was Friedman had mentioned that the players wanted change. And I think that's the first that we've heard someone sort of on the media and infer that they had wanted change. And as a reward, we're now sort of seeing this, you know, effort, and in turn, confidence is a heck of a drug. They've strung together wins early on that somehow pumped some tires. You got Bruce Boudreau is just like he's a great guy. Like, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Like, it's just like, nice guy. I'd like to sit down and have some beers and record a cameo or two with him. Right.
Yeah, and I think there's the type of coach you would have to be to keep a team like going under the circumstances that Travis was like. Mm-hmm. As a player, when you sort of see what's happening around you, like it can sort of blend together as the environment being bad, and I'm not saying Travis was like, you know, a bad coach whatsoever, but I'm sure there were elements that he could have improved upon, and that like everything about the team was crying out for change, like you say. So he was partly a victim of circumstance and partly he probably needed a change too. Like, that can't be good for your coaching either, right? Like,
well, it goes back to what you and I had chatted about, you know, in the last show that you were on, this being the night that the changes all took place.
Right.
You know, I felt that Travis Green would get a job as quick as he wants one. I still think that that's the case. I think he has the ability to be a good to great coach. But maybe to what you're suggesting is that he needed the change of scenery as much as Vancouver needed a change behind the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I can't imagine it was good for him to have to be dealing with the constant struggles, on top of which he was, for whatever reason, the person the team continued to trot out to the media to deal with tough situations. I mean, I get it. You know, I've said this many, many times, Jim Benning, bad communicator when it comes to the public face.
Yeah. And just the lack of accountability in general, like of the management team, which we've already seen improve, you know, Stan Smith speaking to media a lot more, obviously with the change of role, that makes sense. But just in general, it seems to be more people there to, yeah, take responsibility for what's happening with the club.
Well, and it's clear, like the communication that we're hearing is clear. Like, you know, this question came up this weekend, having been on the pregame, or what's it called? What's their show called?
Warm up? Is it? No.
Canucks warm up? I don't know. It's they're on the weekend. I mean, yeah. I begged and pleaded and, you know, harassed Faber into inviting me on.
Yeah, I mean, that was a surprise for me. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess Chris is on the radio. So I was about to take a, you know, jet lag nap, and I was like, I guess I'll turn on the radio instead.
But, you know, the question that Faber had asked me was, do you think that this sort of increased communication is this the way it should have been? Is this a good thing? Or is it just us sort of, oh, my God, people are talking in their words and we understand them? And I'd sort of said, maybe it's possible it's both. But if there's one thing that's clear is that Rutherford simply tells us sort of how it is. I think Jim was trying to tell us how it is, but in Jim's mind, how it is was not necessarily how it was.
He was too honest half the time. And that was kind of the problem, is that he had no like ability to talk about the overall direction of the team. It would just be like what he's feeling at that current moment.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know if it was too honest. I think he would say things without really thinking it through. And it might have been like, you know, that gut instinct, that feeling like, oh yeah, we're 2 years away. Oh yeah, we just, you know, this is the type of player you build around, blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah. I'm not really all that prepared or ready to answer this or articulate really well. Whereas like Jim Rutherford, I mean, he comes across as, I feel, more intelligent, but that's not because there is necessarily more intelligence. I'll leave others to determine that might be the case. It's the clarity that he provides his message in that allows for us to understand as a fan base what he's saying.
Yeah, and I think methodical and thoughtful is kind of the way to go. You know, we don't need to rush into any new direction. Obviously, the GM search is going to be key, and I've definitely expressed some caution maybe around Jim Rutherford just because of his background and the type of like character he is, but I've been definitely impressed so far. I still have reservations with regards to, you know, a sort of more analytical focus. But at the same time, like we mentioned before, there's a lot of voices, and it's not just, you know, an AGM saying, yes, Jim, that's a great idea. Hopefully there'll be someone saying, actually, Jim, let's think about this and maybe try this approach. And yeah, you know, more voices is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in Faber said that on the show a couple weeks back where, you know, the conversations that were happening in the room were a lot of probably yes, Jim's. Like that sort of felt like, you know, if you didn't say yes, you were quickly on the outs. And I hope that a more collaborative front office exists in the, you know, management group that Jim and I guess Stan are putting together. Because that's the other thing. I mean, Stan is the VPOHO.
VPOHO, sure.
Which,
I mean, we don't need to call it that.
No, but I had referred to the president of hockey operations as POHO before, so you knew I had to drop a VPOHO in. But I kind of wonder about that itself. Like, Stan was at one point the interim GM-ish, like collectively. And then like a couple of days later, after the most successful general management tenure of anyone in the Vancouver Canucks system, you have a president hired who was apparently hired before this all had sort of gone down.
Yeah, after their search of two people.
So I kind of wonder about, like, was this elevation of Stan's role within the organization representative of sort of his true role? Like, is he, because I always got the feeling, like, based on the limited amount that we got out of him in the short time that he was running, quote unquote, running the show, was that he didn't like the way things were going, not only on the ice, but I think within the organization, within the front office. And it sounds like he went to ownership. So was he that sort of special advisor to owners that wasn't truly the special advisor? And now that that's the case. But then there's a part of me that also says, well, if I'm Jim Rutherford, why would I be okay with having the quote unquote special advisor as my vice president, knowing that I've, you know, got a competitive voice. So then there's some thought that, you know, is this more of a, hey, Stan, sorry, we did this all behind your back. We're going to elevate you now. Like,
I don't know. I think whatever, Stan has been with the organization that so long that he's always going to have like that kind of special access to the owner, special, like, you know, yeah, but strength of voice. And with the Sedins in there and people like that, I think Jim Rutherford's going to be cautious anyway, stepping into that environment, but he's a strong character in the game. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like he's not experienced. So,
yeah. And I
don't know.
I guess I can see what you're throwing down. I mean, it's just a curious situation. I mean, not to rehash this, but
it, like, is, but
ownership did this to themselves.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's also like for Jim Rutherford, but all these other sort of voices coming in and like changing roles, it's a great opportunity because the only way is up, surely.
Yeah, that is true. And it has been on the ice. So, you know, taking it back to the team that we've been watching play, at some point, the bubble is going to burst, like this, you know, point in every game streak that they're on is going to come to an end. I thought it was actually going to come to an end against the Columbus Blue Jackets, but that was not the case. The team came out and decided to fight for the win. Like, and we're not talking about fight for the win as in, oh, hey, we're going to take this game and get it to a shootout. No, fight for a win. Like it I think I mentioned the favorite felt like very much like the 2011 team where they weren't truly out of it. And like watching the Canucks right now, even when they go down a goal or even go down two, I'm not feeling like they're out of it. And again, it's maybe back to the confidence being a heck of a drug, whether it be, you know, Bruce sitting down with Brock Besser, you know, was it the first practice on the Monday and saying, you know, when you played against us, I didn't know who you are. He probably still didn't quite understand who he was, right? but you know, just shoot the puck.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was not a good environment, in terms of like player morale. So to come in there, you just need to boost your players, I think. And I think you and Faber were talking about this, or maybe you and Clay, about just like Bruce's idea of just getting shots on goal, and the quality of shots will come for like later down the line. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's key. Like, it's not really about specifics in the start. It's about changing the culture of the team, right? It's not about specific tactical stuff. That's going to come, I mean, as they get more practices in through these postponed games, that'll come in. But yeah, it's more about, yeah, changing the character.
Yeah. Well, you know, talking about these games, like, I think getting pucks on net is something that the Vancouver Canucks had struggled with. Like, they had a few games under the, you know, sort of green era this season where they were able to compete. They just ran up against a hot goaltender. I mean, all teams go through that. But there were far too many games where the Vancouver Canucks were being held to like single digits, 19 minutes into a period. And I started to say single digits, low single digits. Whereas now, like, I think it was the game, the most recent game against the Kings. I mean, the Canucks were playing essentially a depleted roster. due to COVID and injury. And yet we're still putting pucks towards the, you know, the net and getting those shots. That's not something we would have, I think, seen from the, you know, the previous team. I don't know how to describe it because it's the same roster. It's the same players. It's simply new coach, new front office. And if I were to go back to when you and I chatted that Sunday night, and let's say I were to tell you, Anna, hey, so you know that the Canucks are not going to lose a game for the rest of the month? I would have questioned my own judgment at that point, and I would hope that you would have probably asked me what it was that I had had for dinner and whether or not I wanted to share.
Whether it was drugs? Like,
I didn't want to say that.
Okay. I mean, yeah, like, obviously I've not been watching the games in detail. I've been, whilst I've been away, but there's definite glimpses of the old Canucks, you know, their defensive failings, some, you know, chaos from the chaos giraffe and pinches at the wrong time. But yeah, the attitude of the team is the compete. Oh, I hate that word, but it's definitely changed. Am I worried still? Yeah, like we're still relying on two good goalies, like, to get us through some of these games. But
this was what we had said was going to happen. Like, the reason we had the C4 Canucks playoffs podcast was because the Vancouver Canucks were going to rely on hot goaltending and the ability to score goals.
Right. And I think they they scored a lot against Seattle, but
they're scoring the goals that are needed. Maybe not a lot, but they're reliant on the hot goaltending and scoring, you know, one more goal. It's what I often will be heard describing as the Grant Fuhr method of goaltending. Make sure I stop that one shot that differentiates my team losing and winning in like a 7-6 game. Maybe I did give Grant Fuhr a disservice by saying that, but that to 80s Oilers hockey often won tough games, high scoring by a goal or two, because Grant was able to somehow manufacture the saves when needed.
I mean, you're right, but two of the most recent games we're looking at were Canucks scored a single goal in regulation.
Yeah.
So,
and in one of them they scored it late to get it to tie it up.
Like,
yeah, sure.
Again, we're looking at hot goaltending, like just good, decent goaltending in John Gibson. He is like one of the strongest goalies out there, like, has kept Anaheim competitive when they were sort of weaker in the up front. Stop me if you've heard this before. Like, we can't really blame them. But yeah, I'm not overly concerned, but yeah, we want to make sure that the offense continues to produce. But, like, you know, mm-hmm. Brock Besser has been out. Pedersen hasn't quite got going yet, and we're still winning games, so it can't be.
Well, that's the scary thing. When Besser gets back in the lineup from his quarantine, when Pedersen finds his game, and Petey will.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to make of what's going to then potentially happen. Maybe I shouldn't be too optimistic here. It's not my my MO, but.
Yeah, but, and like you say, like, I guess one of the comforting things is secondary scoring is getting going. Tyler Mott scored in the last game. Lamico scored not too long ago and has been looking decent, setting up chances, etc. So, yeah, if that depth kind of scoring keeps going, then, yeah, that's a good thing.
As we sort of, you know, wrap things up before we dive in a half full, half empty, the Vancouver Canucks still need to rounding up win two out of every three games moving forward. There is no person out there more closely paying attention to the math than Clay, who after every win sort of shares his thumbs up a GIF because any chance he can, he'll use it. But then, two, he provides sort of his updated you know, standings as to which the Vancouver Canucks get in the playoffs. But considering we had said they need to win 2 out of 3, you know, a month ago, and they have won, you know, was it eight games now?
Eight, seven. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to.
I mean, points in eight, right?
Points in eight. So they've won seven. Okay. So if they've won, let's just keep it as simple. They've won seven. That's two sort of free wins, so to speak, that help them to then lose 2 out of 3 twice. And like, as I look ahead at the schedule, it's not going to do the Canucks any favors, but we're probably looking at this team going into January as still being truly a potential playoff contender based on their current play. Like the bubble will burst. I know this. I don't foresee this team falling so far that they lose all the ground that they've made up. Like, I'm almost optimistic and it feels weird.
Right. And I'm going to rain on your parade because, like you say, it's rare us being so positive. But the problem is this, they would just set themselves back so far. Like, they've essentially been on an eight game point streak at least, and they're still like 7th out of 8th in the division. Like, obviously, and the other thing is it's just so hard to measure because there's such a wide differential in the number of games played, right? Like, Colorado have 6 fewer games than Vancouver.
But that's the thing is, you're right. I'm looking at the stands. Colorado, like, the way things are going, Colorado is they're a playoff team. They're not, something would drastically have to go wrong in Denver for them not to be in the playoffs. But, you know, we have the 3 points to the Edmonton Oilers. Yes, the Oilers have a game in hand, but, you know, Winnipeg has his 3 in hand, so maybe they're a tough one to consider. But as far as points are concerned, Winnipeg and Vancouver are tied with points. Like, I just, you know, I'm looking at this, and the Vancouver Canucks are within sort of striking distance of that wild card spot. And as long as they're there, as they can keep pace. Like, if we get through January where they've won 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. If we are talking about that at the end of January, then yes, I'm with you. Even if
are we buying playoff tickets, you and I?
Yeah, like if we get to the end of January and they've maintained a 2 out of 3 or better pace, then 100%. But let's see after this road trip. Let's talk next week in 2 weeks' time, and we'll see how they came out of Florida and Carolina and Washington. You know.
Yeah, I'm just looking sort of at the win percentage here, or point percentage as they call it in the NHL. The Colorado Avalanche have the best points percentage in the West right now and are holding on to a wild card spot because of the number of postponed canceled games.
Yeah, and like Vancouver has played, I think, the most amount of games in the West. Oh, bar Anaheim and Vegas. But they have had like 6 games postponed, right? Like, they didn't
so far.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into this in the next segment, but yeah. That's a lot of games to make up.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'm letting a little air out of the tires here, just a little. But I'm thinking maybe we do need to go through with that rebrand, C4 Canucks Playoffs Podcast. Let's make it a thing. Anyway, we're taking a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Playoffs Podcast and CanucksHockeyBlog.com on the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
We just talked about it. There have been postponed games for a variety of reasons, of which are all related to this ongoing pandemic that has reared its sort of, I guess, ugly head.
Yeah.
Once again, like, you know, Omicron is highly, you know, contagious.
Yeah.
The infection and incubation rate is expedited. By the time that you have symptoms, you've been, you know, infectious for some time, and it is going through the NHL, and not just the NHL, everywhere, like fire. So the Vancouver Canucks obviously had extended to COVID break, and you have to believe that the NHL wanted that game to go ahead between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks when essentially the break got put into place. Mm-hmm. But things were so dire for both the Canucks, but I think particularly the Maple Leafs at that point, there was concern about the competitive integrity, the ability to put players on the ice. Now, fast forward to where we are today, you could ask the same questions as to why Montreal plays down in Florida when, I think, what did they do? They dressed like six players and one of them was the coach?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's the complete like lack of consistency. I mean, the same conversation is happening in football right now because, you know, what gets a game postponed, what doesn't? Some teams are putting like injured players on their protocol list and, you know, sneaky stuff like that. But the Premier League also has a 84% vaccination rate. Like, it's pretty poor in comparison. But like it or not, like the protocol, NHL protocol is like, yeah, increasing by the day. It's a environment where, you know, COVID's going to spread quite easily, especially like this new variant. So it's a reality. But yeah, you kind of want some clarity on kind of what makes a game go forward or not.
Well, and obviously there's a lot of intricacy to what's happening. And I'm not trying to discount the impact of COVID on the players, on the referees, on team officials. Like, that is by far the biggest impact of all of this. But the trickle-down effect is you have organizations playing in buildings that are booked for a variety of activities, not NHL hockey, you know, day in, day out. Like, there's that that comes into play. There's obviously travel impact. Like, there's a lot that plays into this. Obviously, the Olympics for a period of time, though, as we will get into, won't be happening, at least with NHL players. So I understand there are pressures that have to be sort of dealt with. It's just odd that if we go back to sort of mid-December when games started to get postponed, much of it was, I think, the league trying to figure out how are we going to deal with this? Do we just shut things down? Like, we can't have, like, our own protocol is preventing teams from putting players on the ice. Like, that's our protocol. We don't want to change that, because I think, as much as I might want to think the NHL had the players, you know, well-being at the top of mind, I kind of think it was more about a public perception thing. But now you have postponements not necessarily related to players who are in COVID protocol. Like, Montreal, for instance, went to the league, and while that never came out explicitly, I think if you read between the lines and happened to notice the winks and the nudges, the Canadians were essentially told, no, you're playing. Well, and yet here we have the Vancouver Canucks not playing the New York Islanders this week. That game on Wednesday is postponed. And the NHL has outright said, we're postponing games due to the pandemic-related protocol, which was going to go and force the team to reduce the number of fans in the building. What's sketchy is that if that is what you're doing for the Islanders on Wednesday, why the heck are the Canucks playing at home against the Senators on Saturday?
Yeah. So to me, it just seems like a slap in the face to, like, an additional slap in the face to the fans and the NHLPA, because the NHLPA, like, as we'll get into, like, they're dealing with not having the Olympics, which they fought so hard for, conceded ground to the league for. And then it's just like, okay, so we don't have enough time to make up these games, so we're going to do it in the Olympic break. But we can postpone games purely for attendance reasons. Like, I mean, it's tough. It's going to be, I currently have tickets to the January 8th game. I don't know if I'm going to get to go, I guess.
Well, so that's the other, like,
but
when the team was told,
didn't go empty ahead,
the building.
Yeah, like, if it, I would be much saltier if it didn't go ahead rather than me not getting to go. You know? Yeah. Just, like, play the games. I feel like we're going to get to a point where you won't have the luxury to do that. How are they going to get these games in?
Well, the scuttlebutt as to why, you know, the team like the Vancouver Canucks has a game against the Islanders postponed due to the pandemic restrictions, which the building could have fans. Like, Ontario said none.
Yeah.
And so you saw just this past weekend the Toronto Maple Leafs play in an empty building. It's 50% here in BC, and the NHL's like, no, we're actually not going to play that game. It'll be a future date. And it's purely financial. It's a gate. They wanted to protect the gate, right? And I know there's a logistical nightmare that team's going through and having to contact people to say, hey, your tickets are no longer valid. From what I understand, if you don't have a season ticket, there is a good chance your ticket in a reduced building is no longer valid.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that is
right.
Don't take my...
I don't know where that leaves people that sort of have... like a bunch of tickets or a quarter game pack or a half.
Yeah. Like pack. That. It's in fairness, like for the Vancouver Canucks, like they're working with the hand that they're being dealt like that, you know, it's going to suck and you have to sort of recognize the hierarchy. If you have a full season ticket or you have a, like, I would say it's like suites, full season. Like, I think there's the hierarchy there. Definitely. It's the amount of money.
Yeah, of course.
That people are shelling out. And as much as that's unfair to, like you or I who bought a single ticket, our unfortunate priority is pretty low.
Right. But I understand that. Whereas canceling them, well, postponing them outright, it's the bit that kind of jars with me. It does feel like we're back to the 2020 bubble where they said, well, like, oh, Vancouver, you know, BC's restrictions are too tight, so we're not going to go there. And we'll do it in Alberta where they say we can have... free restrictions. Well, like
the pandemic's over in Alberta, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's been over a while, I think. Good for them.
So, looking at the schedule, though, the Vancouver Canucks postponed on Wednesday, not postponed on Saturday. Now, if you're protecting the gate against the Islanders, you're obviously conceding that the Sens, doesn't matter when you schedule that matchup, the gate's going to be bad. Like, I that's the only thing I can take from them, unless, and this is the other thing, that's a hockey night in Canada game. That's Saturday night.
Yeah.
The Canadian team, is that TV saying we want the game? Like,
I was going to say, like, hockey is a gate first market, which is quite rare in sport. Like, I think almost every other major sport is a TV first market, but hockey night in Canada might be the exception to that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's just, it's surreal. And I think your point is bang on. This is the league essentially trying to say, hey, we've got power. We don't like your restrictions. We're going to go and make it work. It's just going to suck because, like, the Vancouver Canucks now have what? 1, 2, 3, 4. So they have 5 home games they need to reschedule. And that's not counting I think it's just actually 1 road game, just the 1 trip down to San Jose. But, I mean, there's obviously going to be some scheduling gymnastics that need to take place because the Olympic break itself would not be long enough, I think, to fit all these games in, no matter how they sort of make that work.
I mean, obviously, Rogers, like, has events, but it doesn't have another team in there, whereas you're dealing with markets that have an arena, shared arena.
Where the NHL team could be number 3 in the priority.
Exactly. Like, how did the NHL scheduling team make this work? Especially, like, Canucks road trips don't make sense as is. Like, I'm trying to imagine, like,
that how pre-trip,
these work.
Let's go down to San Jose for a match, come home for 2. Let's go back down to San Jose 1 and come back for 1. Like,
plus, there was with the COVID restrictions, maybe we'll use this as a transition with the borders and the inconsistency that there. Well, like Canucks.
I want to give a shout out. Well, no, but I want to give a shout out to the Canucks for actually doing that for the players.
Yeah, because
by flying home, what they were trying to do was to avoid a player like Brock, for instance. He's been left in the United States. I know circumstances are a little bit different because kid's American and all. But the thing is that he's still away sort of from quote-unquote home. And what the Canucks have done is they've provided their players an opportunity to not sort of be left behind. Unfortunately, it didn't work out so well because the tests all came back clear on the trip home, and it wasn't until they got to Seattle where they tested again. Where anyways, was it Dowling this time that got put into protocol in Seattle? Yeah,
passed one, not the other. I mean, what can you do about that? Like,
no,
use better tests. I actually use like faster testing, maybe, but I don't think that's going to happen either way.
No, and it's like, you know, the Oilers, for instance, they had actually played a game just before the holidays down in Seattle. And I can't remember who it was that tested positive now off the top of my head, but tested positive in Seattle. And the Oiler organization went essentially to the ends of the earth to find a way to get him back into Canada because ultimately, if you're positive coming home, you're pretty much a citizen only. Like that's, yeah. If you're a foreign national, coming back into the country is much harder.
I am fully aware of this scenario.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, they were able to sort of make it all work and they had to fly them. They couldn't drive them.
Yeah.
They had to find like a way to,
it had to be a strong Canadian case, right? Like, yeah. That's the thing. It does bring up, just the kind of instability of these players. Like even a NHL player is still a foreign worker, essentially, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, me and friends, Joe and Elise, were talking about this, like, Bess has played for the Canucks for years, but he probably isn't even a permanent resident because he's not here enough to qualify, and it probably doesn't matter that much to him anyway, you know? Except when it comes to circumstances like this, like you think that they'd be above all of those things, but the pandemic kind of is a great leveler.
It's almost the equalizer. Like, you know, but I mean, the situation with Edmonton though, is that in all the logistics that they needed to jump through, apparently the CBSA were the easiest one. Canada Border Services simply wanted to understand what the quarantine plan was.
Right. And which everyone has to present when they,
right,
come even.
And apparently they have not backed down, just like you or I. If you or I were put into a quarantine by the CBSA, they're enforcing that plan, like they're checking in.
I know. But it is random, right? Like I came home, mm-hmm. I came back to Canada 3 days ago, and I, even though I'm approved for permanent residency, I don't have my card yet, so I had to go through the, you know, foreign worker route type thing.
Yeah.
And I just didn't get selected for testing, luckily. So I was, you know, home and free. I mean, I didn't do anything with that freedom. I went home and went to bed because I was heavily jet lagged. But, you know, sometimes it's just luck of the draw. But yeah, either way, you have to present a plan to quarantine and, you know, in case you test positive. And I'm like required to monitor my symptoms for the next 2 weeks. So. Mm-hmm.
The, you know, thing about the Vancouver Canucks, though, is they do have possibly, maybe right now, a game at home against the Sens. And then they head out on the road. They actually head out east. And they're on the road for almost 2 weeks before coming back home, during which time, if any of their players were to test positive, they get to hang out in the U.S., at which point, I presume, they stay there until the next road trip. Time-wise, I mean, I guess not. Like, it depends on sort of where in this trip if you test positive. Yeah,
I guess because the next road trip is in country, and then we don't play again in the U.S. till end of the month, so.
Yeah, it's, and I have to think there are going to be more positive tests, right? Like,
it's just going to happen. Like, also, the lack of boosters, right? That's got to contribute. Like, how slow Canada is with boosters. I don't know where the Canucks are at on that, but
well, I would think if the
every NHL player is there,
if the team has the wherewithal, I think they could probably arrange for boosters in the U.S.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of, it's a lot easier to get in the U.S. even as a foreign national. Like, it's very easy for anyone to get it in the U.K., let me tell you. Like,
and so if that didn't happen, like, when they were in Seattle on Saturday, and I could see, like, you know, the quick turnaround, or maybe down in California, I would have to think that this would be arranged or happening at some point during this next road trip.
I think the risk you're taking that you might, you know, be out of day with side effects is, like, much less than the risk you're taking of, you know, actually being out of the lineup or stuck in the U.S. with quarantine.
Certainly. And, make it very clear, vaccination's the way to go. Like, the infections we're seeing, especially even the breakthrough infections where only two doses have been administered, it's still knocking people on their butt. It's the fact that it's so infectious and, you know, the ability to increase transmission, the boosters seem to prevent that. So I think you're probably raising a fair point. And I think, you know, what we've just talked about is going to hold true. If the Vancouver Canucks were to make it happen, it'll happen on the road. It'll happen quicker. And I'm not trying to make this political. I'm not trying to sort of suggest the Canadian government needs to do something, the British Columbia government needs to do something. I guess.
But
beyond the podcast. Yeah.
But it's without a doubt, there are consequences to lack of speed of administering boosters to the population.
Yeah. Well, heck, I was chatting with a friend of mine who just got her appointment. We're the same age. It's just that her 6 months has come up. Mine 17 days away.
I mean, my 6 months have been and gone, but I guess they're just like, I'm not an at-risk population.
Well, for us in BC, if what I understand correctly, it only just got open up to 6 months and beyond, like, this week.
Right.
The problem is there is a big backlog of people who are well beyond the 6 months, such as yourself. And so I understand if that's sort of the 6 months. So that group is all getting theirs before Chris goes and gets his, especially considering my 6 months has not come up. And the reason I know it's 17 days, I actually looked.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how they count the 6 months, but I just went by 6 months from the date I got my number two is July 17th.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure if it is the invitation or the thing.
Yeah. July 20th. Sorry. I got mine on July 20th. Anywho, you think we're going to see more postponed games at home? Like, the order here in BC goes through to the middle of January, but I kind of suspect that it'll be extended considering case counts as they are, right?
Right. I mean, the Canucks only have four games at home.
Well, the Senators one's weird, but let's presume that's going to happen.
Yeah. So,
and you postponed a game, the Islanders. So the three games remaining at home, Florida on a Friday night, St. Louis on a Sunday, Edmonton on a Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, neither of those seem like huge TV.
The only game that's, it's the Edmonton-Vancouver game, but like that's, if you're protecting the gate, that's a game you postpone. If you're tied into TV, you have the game go. Like the weird ones are the Panthers and Blues in my mind. Cause I mean, Panthers aren't going to bring in a big gate.
No, I mean, it was maybe for the season after Lou left, but
I was at that first game. I was cheering them on.
I mean, same fan I am. Me and you and most of the building. Mm-hmm. And I don't think even this, you know, recent Stanley Cup champs, the Blues are going to draw a huge gate either. Edmonton is pretty, like, I mean, so many people from Edmonton live here, so that's a pretty big gate. Like, I would say, and it's Tuesday, so TV is important, but maybe not that important.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, time will tell. We'll have another show next week. We're not taking next week off. We're back into the regular run of things, so you get to hear us recap one game potentially or none. Who knows? Obviously next week. But before we look to wrap things up, the other story I wanted to talk about was one that just sort of went down this weekend. If for some reason you happen to miss it, let's bring you up to speed. The Vancouver Canucks played down in Seattle quite some time ago. It was the home opener, and I think it was that, was it the Seattle home opener? Was that,
yeah,
was that the game that, yeah. Anyhow, a young woman who happens to actually be going to medical school was sitting like right behind the Vancouver Canucks bench. And she happened to notice what she thought was a problematic mole on the back of Red Hamilton or Brian Hamilton, Red Hamilton's neck. And so she decides to try to get his attention, let him know, hey, go get this checked out. So she goes and she apparently did something on her phone, like to have like big text, colorful, what have you, make it stand out, got his attention. He looked at it, glanced at it, read it, and sort of continued on his way. Now, she knew nothing more than that. Red comes home, and it's apparently been sitting in his mind. He talks to his wife about this message, like, hey, do I have a mole here? And she's like, yeah. Does it look weird? I don't know, kind of. So he goes and talks to the teen doctor. Teen doctor says, yeah, this could be something. Let's send it off for biopsy. And as it would happen, it came back as malignant. And this all has sort of taken place, obviously, because it's been now months. Well, Red, because they're now back in Seattle, goes through the team to put out a press release to try to find her. Like, because, I mean, who knows if she's going to be at the next game, right? It's a difficult task finding one fan, especially if, you know, they're not necessarily season ticket holders or that you would necessarily know. And through the power of social media, she was found. She was actually going to the game, I think, regardless. And she was actually going, like, it would have been her first opportunity to try to check in. Like, she actually said, I kind of was curious what had happened. But it was such, I want to say a wonderful story, because it truly was wonderful. But it's also, I think, a very powerful story, considering what she was able to go and do, and in turn, how he was able to go and get I don't know, is it like, was it cancerous or precancerous, but like the malignant melanoma? Yeah.
Either way, not cancer. Good news, right? Like,
no, right. Like dealt with early on.
Something really bad.
Like it was a feel good moment that I didn't know I needed.
Yeah. I mean, and as anyone watching the game saw, the Canucks and the Kraken got together and put together a $10,000 scholarship for her medical education as well. So, yeah, really rewarding story. But I think it's kind of speaks to, if something isn't right, like, say something. Like, just in general, it's a good lesson and heartwarming. But, yeah, it's funny. I got a text this morning from my brother's fiance saying, the Canucks are on ITV News. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Like, well, and I think they, like,
happening. But yeah, it's clearly a story that resonates across the globe.
Well, Nadia and Brian were on CNN, I think, today talking about it. Like, it is, you're right, it's a story of resonance. I wouldn't be surprised if it was worldwide. I know many of our listeners probably follow Clay. Clay got to sit down and chat with Nadia on his YouTube channel. So,
yeah,
it's, yeah, I mean, it's a really good conversation. And, you know, I think she talks at one point about how she almost didn't like send the message. Like, it's like, well, like, and I mean, I'd be in my shoes. I don't know if I would have said anything. And she's far more obviously educated than I am in this particular issue, but I don't think I would have spoken up.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, there's been a couple of instances on UK television of people writing into, you know, breakfast shows or something where like someone is on every day and they've noticed something and, you know, they've got it checked out and been able to deal with it as well. So I have heard about it before, but like, let me tell you, like, I was kind of shocked that it made it to UK news. Cause like, hockey is just so far from the consciousness of the UK in a way that, like, NFL is pretty present, and then occasionally NBA and baseball make it onto the news, but just the story itself was so powerful.
Well, and that's, yeah, it's not a hockey story is why.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, to you and I, there's quite a bit of hockey there, but it's not. It's,
I almost want to go check it out and see how they pronounce Canucks, because British people
Canucks
really struggle with the emphasis on that word for some reason.
Mm-hmm. ITV, you say? Maybe I should go and try to find it. Well, even though I find, like, if I try to go to the BBC website, even using a VPN, it still sends me to bbc.com.
Oh, I mean, I don't think ITV is that smart, so.
Oh, well, okay.
We real VPNs work, because I'm actually watching a show on ITV that I started over Christmas. Okay. So.
On the note, though, of getting things checked out, listening to someone, I don't think I've really shared it broadly. Not hockey related, but this is me listening to a message. So I got an Apple Watch this past summer. I finally went full Apple. And in November, I got this message on my watch that told me I had low cardio health or low cardio fitness. It's weird. What does this mean? And so I looked at it, and it says it's essentially talking about how it's doing a measurement of my heart rate, fitness level, age, all these factors that I've given it and what it's sort of paid attention to. And it's come up with this. And I sort of ignored the first time. And then it nagged me pretty quick after again. And so I decided to book an appointment with my GP, right? Because this is what it's saying. And so I talked to her, and she's like, well, okay. You know, have you been feeling like when you're walking and all that, like, are there going to be pain, chest pains? I'm like, no. But I'm finding I'm getting a little winded, like more so than I have been. Mm. So I got scheduled for a cardiac stress test just before the holidays. Essentially, it's where they hook you up to the electrocardiogram, yeah, the ECG, and then you run on like a treadmill, and it scales up. And it's a crude test that generally only shows if there's a significant problem, but it can help sort of shed light on the potential of others. And there is something that I need to go and get some further testing for. This is all because I listened to a nag on my watch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think it's important to take your health seriously. And I'm not, like, in this case, what did Red do? He went back and it bothered him enough that he asked his wife, and then he's like, hey, I'm going to see a doctor. Cause what was the worst thing the doctor could say? Right. Well, it's cancerous. But the thing is that the odds are, it's nothing. Let's get it checked out. Oh, it came back as nothing. Well, that's great. I'd much rather waste my time for that than to not take the time at all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in the circumstance that I'm sharing, this is for me, it's been a wake up call. It's one of the reasons why I'm really now focusing on getting into better health. But yeah, you know, take these messages for what they are.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a good lesson to take to heart. Sorry for saying heart there.
No, it's fine. It's
I honestly didn't mean to do that.
No. And I don't mean to leave anything up in the air. I don't know what's wrong quite yet. I'm waiting for a cardiac CT, which will then give a better indication of what's going on. The doctor wasn't so concerned. It's like, we're admitting you. But obviously they don't book you to go in and get tests just for, like, well, you know what? We got an opening. Let's just make it happen. So anyhow, but again, this all came from a little nag on my watch, which honestly, I didn't have to wait for my watch. I had been complaining about small things to my wife for some time now, and she's been telling me to talk to the doctor. So yeah.
Well, I mean, you were obviously taking this story to heart, or maybe, I guess it happened before. But, you know, it's a good lesson. Pay attention. Bodies are important. Mm-hmm. Let's pay attention to what our bodies are telling us, or the experts. Well,
I mean, I was going to say, you've only got one, Might as well listen to it.
Yes, good call.
So as we look to wrap things up, I told you at the start of the show, I'm glad you're back. It wasn't the same. As much as Chris and Clay's Canucks commentary or Chris and Chris's Canucks commentary had a good ring on it, it just wasn't the same. So thanks for returning. But I do have to ask, did you listen to either of the shows while you were away?
I listened to both. Okay, I will say that I wasn't as vigilant with my podcast listening in general while I was home, obviously. I didn't have as much time to myself. But I will say that, so Chris Favorite tweeted me right after recording the show, I think, about the...
I think while we were recording is when he tweeted about the
candy. About the candy. So luckily I got that tweet before I listened. I think I only listened on the plane ride back to the second episode there. So luckily I heard it beforehand and was able to purchase him a bag.
Okay, that was the follow-up question. Because he vague tweeted it. I'm like, do I go and actually like...
I will say those aren't super common. Like I did see them in like Tesco, but they're not like everywhere. I've had them once before. They're fine. But they're no Percy Pigs.
Described on the podcast.
Let me his say favorite. That. Percy Pigs are the real MVPs.
Did you bring Percy Pigs back?
I mean, he did, but I'm not going to give them out willy-nilly. So, but you know, if we meet up in person, as like we've been threatening to do for a couple months here,
we'll tweet out a picture of Chris trying one Percy Pig that Anna was willing to share.
Yeah, one seems reasonable.
Okay. But, well, I'm glad you not only listened to the show, but you were able to bring back the candy that Chris Faber vague tweeted you about. Oh, man. I also wanted to point out that when I was sort of trying to play along, like, oh, who might be the guest host? Friend of the show, Lisa Martin. She's like, Clay and Faber and Quads. And it's like,
okay. Oh. I guess you figured it out, Lisa.
Like, this is like, it was like bang, like boom, boom. Like, okay, of all the people, and I'm trying to talk at them. Well, Clay's pretty busy. And then, like, I don't know, Faber and Quads, they've got their own show and they're on the radio and all that. And I'm like, then she went Matt. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, but I'm bang on. It's like either she knows us really well, or maybe we need to expand our potential guest host ledger.
Yeah. I mean, variety is a spice of life and all that. But, you know, I'm not planning to exit anytime soon. So.
Well, that's good. I mean, I do not give you permission to leave me. Wow. As much as I continue to drive, you know, co-hosts away, I'm finally putting my foot down and saying no.
No more.
No more.
They leave and they take their jersey with them.
That's true. That's still, I didn't realize that. I presumed you had it. I didn't realize he had it.
No, Matt still has it. Yeah. He got it in the divorce.
The Vaxco jersey from a former friend of the show, Kenny.
Yeah.
And I say former in so much that I'm not sure Kenny still listens.
But if you do.
But he did.
Hi and thanks. You know,
yes. Oh, as I was sort of saying, how are your holidays though? It was good. I know I'd asked you if you got a good dose of home, and it sounds like you did.
Yeah. I mean, I really miss my family not having been in 2 years. So it was really lovely. I got to go to a couple of football games before they got canceled.
I think I saw pictures of one match that you were at.
But yeah, I got to go to two, but the third one I was meant to go to was canceled because the other team had COVID. But yeah, I got to go to a couple museums. I didn't get to go to the theater because that was canceled. But yeah, the main part was seeing my family and a couple of close friends. And yeah, obviously it's a weird place to be right now with COVID and everything. And the culture isn't quite the same around that. But the one positive thing around UK dealing with COVID is the availability of tests. So I did, you know, I tested a lot while I was over there, probably every 2 days. So hopefully BC can catch up with that. But yeah, it was a good time. I'm glad I went. Thank you for covering for me.
Anytime. I'm glad you got to go home and see the family. I honestly don't know how you have done it to this point.
Yeah, it's been tough for sure. But tell me, what was your holiday like?
Stuck in the snow. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cool thing was that we obviously had a white Christmas. I mean, it's the epitome of, you know, North American Christmas culture. I don't know if it's as big outside of North America, the white Christmas concept, but baby Forrest quite enjoyed it. She got to go out on a sled for the very first time.
That's cool.
When we lived in Richmond, owning a sled didn't really make a whole lot of sense because one, got very little snow, and two, everything's flat. We learned that going down the hill in a sled, maybe not her thing yet. She enjoyed the very slow.
I mean, one step at a time.
Lean slope out back. But no, she enjoyed that. She got to throw snowballs at daddy.
That's also fun. Really, I kind of want to do that too.
If I had a complaint about the snow, is it was so powder dry, you couldn't make snowballs.
Yeah, I kind of felt that when I was walking through it, like that you literally drop through the snow. Like if there was any pile of snow whatsoever, you would just drop through it because it was so powdery.
Yeah, the snow that I'm accustomed to us getting is like the really wet, chunky stuff.
I feel like I don't know how to describe it now, but
well, no, but like, you know, like there's different types of snow, and it's like we usually get that snow where it's just below freezing, and so there's, I think, like a lot of like moisture water in it. Whereas like the, when it gets really cold, that snow, it's like, it's powder dry. It's like almost like dust. So anyhow, we might get some more apparently in the next couple of days. So, but, beyond that, I mean, it was good. We stayed local. My in-laws weren't able to come down because of the snow. They live up essentially a side of a mountain. So
right,
they made the choice to stay home, and it was a good decision.
Yes.
Because
overall, yeah.
I mean, they could have been stuck here too. We had left that door open. But they have a dog who has never really lived with a cat, and we have a cat that's never lived with a dog. So it would either have been a really good thing or a really bad thing.
Yeah, that sounds tricky.
So hopefully we'll see them sooner than later, but
yeah.
Anyway, hopefully all of our listeners had a good holiday period, or as good of one as they could possibly muster with everything that's been going on. No text messages or voicemail to the C4 text line. So we're overdue. You, our listeners, need to drop us a note, 604-200-6201. I mean, I told Clay this. I said the same thing to Faber. It is the perfect opportunity to advertise because I'll like read it verbatim.
But
watch us get one now.
I have
like completely off the wall.
I'm going to go for like specific suggestions of what people should send in and see if that like drums up some interest. So one, mm-hmm. the weirdest present or best present that you received over the holidays. Mm-hmm. Two, where do you stand on the team playoffs? Like, are you Philly C4 team playoffs or are you not there yet? I don't have a three. But those are my two suggestions. Okay. You can like come at us with anything, but those are particular ones that I want to hear.
Okay. Well, the number again is 604-200-6201. That's 604-200-6201. And no reviews for quite some time. It's been a while. I saw, was it Helford today? Or Bra? Anyhow, had tweeted out someone had left a review on a podcast. I think it was a podcast, but their name was Daryl, D.A.R.Y.L. And the first thing I thought of was a 1985 movie called Daryl, which I need to go and see if I can watch again because it was so good.
I mean, do you not know it? Is it about a robot?
Yeah, it's essentially a robot child.
That sounds creepy.
But, so there's like a lot of these like 80s movies. Chucky. Yeah, but it's not like that. It's not horror that it's more sci-fi. Like War Games, watching that movie now in the context at the time, it's kind of weird, but then it could be very well true. In fact, probably more true today than it isn't, but also a good movie. Do you want to play a game?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Creepy.
Yeah. Okay.
Children, like, a kind of creepy anyway, but like robot children just sound terrifying. Not all children. And tell,
hey, baby force.
Hashtag not all children. You know I love baby force.
I know you do. You'd go to the end of the world for her, I think, before you'd go to the end of the world for me. And I'm okay with that.
Well, true, because she's more adorable than you are. Sorry.
Well, if you think Baby Force is adorable, let us know in Discord, discord.io/C4podcast, or obviously on Twitter at the C4 podcast. But Anna, what final words of wisdom do you have for all of our listeners on your return to the show?
I mean, I kind of hope that I'm not the problem, that just because I'm back in the country, the Canucks are going to start losing. Obviously, I'm one for one since I arrived back.
Well, no, you're 101.
Yeah.
Because that's 3 points out of two games.
Well, it can't help if games are cancelled. But, yeah, and I hope I get to go to a game next week, but we'll see. You know, mm-hmm. See what the NHL Masters have in store for us. So,
yeah. For me, stay safe. If you can get your booster, go get it. Obviously, keep doing what you're all doing. Hopefully, in the nearer future, we're going to be talking more endemic pandemic. I'm happy to get to that point. So much so that I've decided to like be more positive, because as you heard in the show, I'm starting to talk playoffs without being sarcastic about it. I'm focusing on my health. I'm trying to get fit. I'm eating smart. I'm deciding that 2022 is going to be my year, and I kind of think the Canucks are going to potentially make it theirs too. So,
I mean,
y'all can join us.
That is testing fate, but okay.
Yeah, well, whatever. But yeah, on behalf of Anna, A4603, myself, Chris, Ally Force, going to sign off of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network, CanucksHockeyBlog.com, with We Out.